Welcome to the February 10th service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. The service today is led by our settled minister, Reverend Pam Phillips, and the title of her sermon is Trust Me. The podcast begins with Rev Pam introducing a YouTube video, Why Trust Is Worth It, that was shown on a TV monitor. The audio from that video is included in the podcast, and a link to the video is on the past sermon's webpage. During the sermon, Rev Pam refers extensively to another video, The Anatomy of Trust, featuring Brené Brown. The link for that video is also on the past sermon's page.
So the reading today is a video. And the fact that I got to watch you all sing up while looking at the screen instead of down into your hymnals was just a bonus. So if you cannot see the screen very well, it's only 3 minutes. I invite you to move forward. There are subtitles, but they're pretty small. So if you put yourself where you can see. All right, let's see if we can do it.
Yeah. Alia and Gael have to trust each other. As acrobats in Cirque du Soleil, they sometimes literally put their lives in someone else's hands. Trust is a confusing thing. It seems so simple, but when you try to pin it down, it can be elusive. I think of the way that my body sits on a surface that's new to me, unknown, and how my muscles remain tight, anticipating anything. And I'm constantly aware of that surface. Over time, with familiarity, I can relax and start to lean back. For many of us, that initial tension exists so much of the time. We expend so much energy watching and calculating, trying to predict, reading signals in people, ready for anything to change suddenly. Preparing to be disappointed. So much energy spent. We talk about trust as something you build, as if it's a structure or a thing, but in that building there seems to be something about letting go. What it affords us is a luxury. It allows us to stop thinking, to stop worrying that someone won't catch us if we fall, to stop constantly scanning for inconsistencies, to stop wondering how other people act when they're not in our presence. It allows us to relax a part of our minds so that we can focus on what's in front of us. And that's why it's such a tragedy when it's broken. A betrayal can make you think of all the other betrayals that are waiting for you and things that you haven't thought of and people you rely on. And you can feel yourself tightening up, bracing, and in the worst cases, you might resolve to trust no one. But that doesn't really work. Trust is your relationship to the unknown, what you can't control, and you can't control everything. And it's not all or none. It's a slow and steady practice of learning about the capacity of the world. And it's worth it to keep trying. And it's not easy. Alia says that trust is like a fork, not one way, but many ways. Physical, emotional, and maybe something else. I almost imagine trust as these invisible hands that we stretch out into the world looking for someone to hold on to as we walk into the unknown future. Alia and Gael began practicing together as friends, and now they are a couple. It took time. So who do you trust? How can you grow it?
Talk about trust. Acrobats embody trust every time they perform with one another, literally putting their lives in each other's hands. They make trust, something that may seem elusive or difficult to describe, visible tangible, concrete. We got to see some spectacular acrobatic feats a few weeks ago at the Moss Art Center. Did anyone see the Cirque Eloise? Yeah, it was amazing, wasn't it? It was really scary to see how high they flew up over the stage, and I found myself holding my breath more than once. I felt like the narrator in the video who spoke of what it's like to sit on a new surface, how his muscles remain tight, anticipating anything, being constantly aware of that surface until it becomes familiar and he can lean back and relax. That image resonates with me, not just when I'm watching acrobats, but when entering any new situation or new relationship into the unknown. It takes time to feel comfortable, relax, to trust the situation, to trust the people, to trust myself. It seems especially fitting to be talking about trust, what it is, how to build it, and how to repair it this Sunday. This Sunday, when we are still reeling from the revelations, the apologies, the broken trust with our elected officials. This Sunday, as we look ahead, some with anticipation and some with trepidation, to a day that celebrates love and relationships, St. Valentine's. Trust, newly formed or long-standing, broken or repaired, trust is on our minds. Now, I'm guessing most of us know what it feels like to not yet trust someone. As Z. Frank, the author and the narrator of the video, he characterizes it, we feel an initial tension and expend energy watching, calculating, trying to predict, reading signals in people, ready for anything to change suddenly, preparing to be disappointed. Have you ever felt that way? When we first get to know someone, either in a work setting or a social setting, you're wary and maybe even expecting the worst. We can worry so much about what might happen, how things might end, that we can't really enjoy what's happening right now, especially if we've experienced untrustworthy people in our past. If you've had a boss or a coworker who was mercurial or unreliable or competitive and filled your work days with anxiety and stress, when you meet a new boss or a coworker, you might take some time, scope things out, maybe even test them a little before you're ready to trust them. Or if you've had a close friend, someone with whom you've shared personal stories who betrayed your trust, when you start a new friendship, you might hold back a little longer before sharing so much. Or if a romantic partner has broken your heart. These seem the worst because not only do we lose trust in the other person, but also in ourselves. When we lose trust in those most intimate relationships, we begin to question ourselves. How could I have been so naive? Why didn't I really realize what was going on? No wonder we expend so much energy preparing to be disappointed. We don't want to give away our trust too quickly, too easily, or unwisely. Trust is something too valuable to give away without care. But when we do begin to trust, I'm guessing most of us know what that feels like too. Frank characterizes the process of creating trust between people as one of letting go, not building up. And then he writes, we are afforded a luxury that allows us to stop thinking, to stop worrying that someone won't catch us if we fall, to stop constantly scanning for inconsistencies, to stop wondering about how other people act when they're not in our presence. It allows us to relax a part of our minds so that we can focus on what's in front of us. Think of someone you do trust. Does it feel like a letting go? I think of the image of the couple in the video who have such deep trust in each other that they're willing to let the other one hold them upside down. But their muscles are way too taut, so I can't think of them as letting go. Instead, I think of being so at ease with someone that you don't have to guard your words or your heart. No worrying, no wondering. That image of letting go resonates. But trust is more than just a feeling. And there's lots of ways of understanding trust. And as I looked through different resources, some very interesting, there's a lot about trust in the workplace when you look for podcasts and things online, in addition to relationships. But the one way of thinking about it that really appealed to me is one that was in the Soul Matters small group ministry packet. So some of you might have already seen it. It's a video of Brené Brown, a research professor of social work who studied and written extensively on courage and vulnerability, shame and empathy. In the video, she explains the anatomy of trust. And part of me just wants to play the video for you to see, because she is funny and she is wise. And I encourage you to look for the video later. You can get it online and on our page. Maybe we can even include it in the podcast. But I do want to give you a taste today of what she had to say. She shares a definition of trust from Charles Feldman, author of The Thin Book of Trust. He describes trust as choosing to risk making something you value vulnerable to another person's actions. Choosing to risk making something you value vulnerable to another person's actions. And distrust as deciding that what is important to me is not safe with this person in this situation or in any situation. So when you trust someone, you choose to risk something you value. Your children, your car, your money, your work, your reputation, your story, your secrets, your heart. Something you value, you risk to another person's actions. And when you distrust someone, you decide that what's important to you is not safe with them. Now, based on her research, Brown found 7 elements of trust that are useful in trusting others and ourselves. And she created the acronym BRAVING, because trust means braving connection to others. Now, breaking trust down into its components gets away from the feelings of trust, but that's especially useful when it comes to rebuilding trust. If you tell someone, I don't trust you anymore, that could mean a lot of things. By being able to identify more specifically how trust has been broken, you create the possibility of repairing it. So here are the 7 elements encompassed in the acronym BRAVING: boundaries, reliability, accountability, vault, explain that in a minute, integrity, non-judgment, and generosity. So boundaries. You respect my boundaries, and when you're not clear about what's okay and not okay, you ask. You're willing to say no. Reliability. You do what you say you'll do, always. This means staying aware of your limitations so you don't overpromise and are able to deliver on your commitments. Accountability. You own your mistakes, apologize, and make amends. Here's vault. You don't share information or experiences that are not yours to share. I need to know that my confidences are kept and that you're not sharing with me any information about other people that should be confidential. Integrity. You choose, this is her definition, I love it. You choose courage over comfort. You choose what is right over what is fun, fast, or easy. And you choose to practice your values rather than simply professing them. Non-judgment. I can ask for what I need, and you can ask for what you need. We can talk about how we feel without judgment. In the video, she talks about how it's easier for us to help someone than to ask for help. And this is something I hadn't thought about. When we're afraid to ask for help, we're judging ourselves. I shouldn't be so weak. I shouldn't need the help. Does that make sense? So if we're doing that to ourselves, when our friend asks for our help, aren't we also judging them as being weak? That was really powerful for me. I don't know. Finally, generosity. You extend the most generous interpretation possible to the intentions, words, and actions of others. So when someone messes up, you expect the best of them. They didn't mean to do it. So think about the last time you lost trust in someone. Can you identify which of these elements was affected? Did they violate a boundary? Were they unreliable? When they made a mistake, were they unaccountable, failing to own up or make amends? Did they open up the vault, violating confidentiality, either yours or someone else's? Did they act without integrity, doing what was easy or comfortable instead of what was right? Were they judgmental, putting you down for not being perfect or asking for help? When you made a mistake, did they interpret it generously, ungenerously, not giving you the benefit of the doubt and the opportunity to make amends? And if you can identify which one or a couple of these elements of trust was broken, what would it look like to name it to that person who has lost your trust? To let them know how their actions have shaken your trust in them. Could it begin a process of repair? Is the relationship worthy of repair? And that's a genuine question, because sometimes the breach is so great that it can't be mended. Sometimes people are just plain untrustworthy, and no amount of honest feedback will help them become trustworthy. Sometimes it's better if we protect what we value and ourselves from their actions. But other times? Now, as I think about the news these past weeks about the statewide elected officials who have been so much in the news, I've been wondering how or if they could regain our trust. Learning about their actions, both those they've admitted to and those they've been accused of, has made it difficult to know whether we can trust them moving forward. We question their reliability, their accountability, and their integrity. And our experience of their betrayals of our trust depends on who we are. To some, photographs of people in blackface is a bit of youthful cluelessness and insensitivity. It was a long time ago. Things were different then. But to others, it stirs up feelings of pain and rage at a mocking and dehumanizing practice. It hurts deeply. To some, allegations of sexual assault is a matter of he said, she said. For others, it stirs up feelings of deep pain and rage at women not being believed. And for people who invested their time and money into their campaigns, that sense of betrayal is magnified. So here's the place in my sermon where I should be telling you what to do and to think and to feel about our governor and lieutenant governor and attorney general. And I can't. I sat in a room yesterday with some people with very different takes on this situation. And when I look at the news and I see the polls, 47% resign, 47% stay. And I listen to African American people who I have to admit have more at stake in this, whose pain I cannot feel as deeply as they can. So I don't know what to tell you to do. But if we're going to hold our officials accountable, it has to be more than words. And whatever their past actions, we must demand actions now to undo the racism in our society. Some of you have heard of Union Hill. It's a compressor station. It's part of the pipeline. And it's in a historically black community, and our governor supports it. So if you do want to do something, send him a letter and say, if you want us to trust you, then give us more than your words. Do something. I didn't write that part down. I don't know. It's hard, people. It's hard. But if we want to trust each other in community, we have to hear each other's hard truths. And whether you feel that pain or not, at least acknowledge that that pain is real. And do whatever you can to stop supporting the systems of oppression that continue that pain. I was going to say sermon over, but I'm in the middle of it. So the seven elements that Brown gives us helps us consider situations where trust has been broken and how to ask for what we need, especially from the people with whom we are in close relationship and our elected officials. But they also give us ways to think about how we might establish trust with each other in our personal relationships, our work relationships, and our congregational relationships. And none of these elements of trust is isolated. They're all interconnected. Looking through the lens of braving, I understand so much better how I was able to gain a trusting relationship with a colleague who told me flat out when I first started my internship that he didn't know me, he didn't trust me, and that I would have to earn his trust. He was letting me know. So as we went through the process of writing a staff covenant, we each identified what we felt was most important for us to be in a good working relationship. And this was an exercise in boundaries, making it clear what we needed from each other. And the word that was most important to him was accountability. He wanted us to hold each other accountable for doing what we said we would do, being reliable, and acting with integrity. And his generosity when I made mistakes, because I did make mistakes, made it so much easier for me to own up, to apologize, and to make amends. And over time, we began to trust each other. Because earning trust doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. And the research shows that it isn't grand gestures, but small, consistent acts that build trust. Now, Brené Brown uses the metaphor of a marble jar, like the ones used by teachers in their classrooms to encourage positive behavior. Have you ever had a marble jar? Teacher. Each time a student or the class makes a good choice, the teacher puts a marble in the jar. And once it's full, there's a celebration. Each time people in a relationship maintain boundaries, are reliable, are accountable for their actions, maintain the vault of confidentiality, act with integrity, are non-judgmental and generous with each other, they put a figurative marble into the jar. And the people we trust are those who have earned enough marbles, who have given us enough drops of love. Think of the people you trust. How have they earned marbles? What small acts have they put into your relationship so that you are willing to make something you value vulnerable to their actions? What marbles have you earned? In the video, she talks about how someone remembering her parents' names, that was a marble. Or her daughter said that you earn a marble when your friend sees there isn't a seat in the cafeteria and she gives you hiney space on your seat. Little acts that show that you see them and what they need. So what does this have to do with us here at UUC? Let's look at the covenant, especially the middle part that we don't recite every week. We promise in our covenant to listen to one another respectfully, assume good intentions, use the power of our words with care, express gratitude, honor our differences, help one another, and welcome all. We will communicate directly, honestly, and compassionately. When we hurt one another, we will forgive, make amends, and reconnect. Those are lofty words, aren't they? I wonder how we're doing with that. It's not always easy to assume good intentions, especially when the person across the table or on the email thread is disagreeing with us, or when we're not careful with our words. Sometimes it's hard to speak directly to the person we're upset with, or to speak candidly and honestly, because it might upset the peace. Sometimes it's hard to admit when we've hurt someone, or even to admit when we've been hurt. creating, maintaining, and rebuilding trust. Creating compassionate community takes hard work and commitment and a willingness to hold ourselves accountable when we fall short. As we begin the holy conversation about the possibilities of our future together as a community of faith, we'll need to rely on our covenant and be willing to brave not only connection, but conflict. We won't all have the same priorities or expectations, and we shouldn't. Making decisions about who we want to be and what we want to do together will be best served by speaking and listening with open hearts and open minds, with trust. And we can build that trust with the people in our lives by earning marbles and braving connections. Because trust requires our care and attention and the willingness to risk what we value, to be vulnerable. And sometimes that means trusting each other enough to ask for help and to accept it, to lean on one another. And it's worth it.